This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 16. Krishna chastises the serpent Kaliya. Today's text number 35. So the word meanings, tapa, austerity, suptaptam, performed, properly performed, kim, what, anena, by this Kaliya, purvam, in previous lives, Nirasta manena, being free from false pride, cha and manadena, giving respect to others, dharma, religious duty, atava or else, sarvajana, to all persons, anukampaya, with compassion, yata, by which, bhavan, your good self, tushyati, is satisfied, Sarva Jiva, the source of life for all beings. Tapasutaptam kim anena purvam.
Tapasutaptam kim anena purvam.
Nirastamanena chamanadena. Dharmotava sarva jananukampaya. Yato bhavam stushyati sarva jivam. Tapasutaptam kimanena purvam. Nirastamanena chamanadena. Dhammotava sarva jananukampaya. Yato bhavam stushyati sarva jivam. Tapasutaptam kimanena purvam. Nirastamanena chamanadena. Dharmotava sarva jananukampaya. Yato bhavam stushyati sarva jiva. Yato bhavam stushyati sarva jiva. Ladies.
Tapasutaptam kimanena purvam.
Translation. Did our husband carefully perform austerities in a previous life with his mind free of pride and full of respect for others? Is that why you are pleased with him? Or did he in some previous existence carefully execute religious duties with compassion for all living beings? And is that why you, the life of all living beings, are now satisfied with him? So these are questions that the wives of Kaliya are putting forward after seeing the tremendous mercy that Lord Krishna has given to their husband. So the purport here is a short purport, and it appears to be directly quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada comments in his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 16. The Nagna Patnis confirm that one cannot come in contact with Krishna without having executed pious activities in devotional service in one's previous lives. As Lord Chaitanya advised in his Shikshastaka, one who has to execute devotional service by humbly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, and not expecting honors for oneself, but offering all kinds of honor to others. The Nagni Patnis were astonished that, although Kaliya had the body of a serpent as a result of grievous sinful activities, at the same time he was in contact with the Lord to the extent that the Lord's lotus feet were touching his hoods. Certainly, this was not the ordinary result of pious activities. These two contradictory facts astonished them. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport here two contradictory facts. Well, I don't know exactly, and it's hard for me to know objectively, but I've heard that when men, living entities that are conditioned by the body of thinking that they're men, when they come upon a contradiction, you know, they want to fix it. You know, men are fixers. We got to fix it. We got to do something with this contradiction to resolve it. So I would advise all of the men or people in the assembly here who may be thinking themselves in terms of the body, the male body particularly, but female body also, that we don't have to fix it. It's okay. It's okay that there's a contradiction here. I think this is part at least of what Srila Jiva Goswami means when he says that to understand the inconceivable absolute truth, you have to accept that the supreme absolute truth is inconceivable. You have to accept the inconceivability of God in order to understand God. And so part of that inconceivability are contradictions like this that we may find. And so it's not necessary, I don't think, to resolve the contradiction to understand Krishna, to understand this Leela. But rather, we just have the opportunity presented to us by these two contradictory facts to enhance our study and hearing of Krishna Leela. And so today, what I would like to do is discuss three different aspects of understanding. Well, let's not use the word understanding. Let's let three ways in which we can hear this pastime and benefit from hearing this pastime. Three different ways in two different categories. The two categories being Siddhanta, or a philosophical conclusions based on the Shastra that we can understand from the activity, and Leela, the exchange of loving feelings that are presented here in this Leela. All three ways give us different ways of looking at a jewel. If you look at a jewel, you know, there are different facets or faces of the jewel. And if you look at them in different ways or hold it to light in different ways, you get different colors coming from the same object. Different colors, just depending on how you look at it. And so all of those things are part of the essence of the jewel. And so if we look at this Leela, this pastime, in these three ways, and these are only three ways, and there are many more ways, we can appreciate Krishna in so many ways. So Siddhanta first, sort of philosophical conclusions that we can derive from this, the situation where, although it appears Kaliya has this terrible body of a venomous serpent based on past sinful activities, yet at the same time he has the fortune of Krishna's feet dancing on his hooves. So two things we can know about these contradictions. One is by examining the qualities of Sri Krishna, and the other is understanding the nature of a devotee. So these are the first two, and they're in the category of Siddhanta. So let's go to the devotee first, because that's where Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur concentrates his commentary on this verse. So I'm just going to read a little bit of what Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. The Nagapatnis continued, he's quoting the verse, paraphrasing the verse, with his mind free from false prestige and full of respect for others, Kaliya must have done austerities in a previous life. Then he says, such activity, such austerity is characteristic of a real Vaishnava. For one does not see this type of austerity practiced by the non-devotees. As the Lord says, I am not pleased with wealth or austerities. Ordinary austerities do not evoke the mercy of God. In some previous life, Kaliya executed religious duties with compassion for all living entities, and thus he is a Vaishnava. Mercy towards all living entities is not seen in the heart of a fruitive worker. So this is a point that you can know a Vaishnava by the questions of the Nagapatnis here. Specifically, this idea that they're putting forth that how he was concerned for others. How he was concerned for others. And Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes a point that such concern for others is not seen in fruitive workers. It's not seen in fruitive workers. Actually, the first time I read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse there, and it explains how one who's engaged in fruitive activity That furtive activity is a symptom of ignorance. I thought, wow, furtive activity is a symptom of ignorance. It means that if you're engaged in furtive activities, you're ignorant. You're ignorant of what? Well, you're ignorant of the role of the Supreme Lord in all of your activities, because a fruitive worker mainly thinks that, well, I'll work, I'll do this, and I'll get this result. There's no calculation that Krishna is part of the equation here, that I'm dependent on him to achieve the results of any activities I perform. So the ordinary fruitive worker, as he goes throughout his life, no matter how apparently pious or impious he may be, he's in ignorance because he's not acting in knowledge, the true knowledge of what's happening around him. He's thinking, by my activity, I'm getting a certain result. But that's not the whole equation. Krishna is there. And only by Krishna's involvement does any result happen. So one who's engaged in fruitive activities, they also have the tendency to be very selfish, even if they're performing so-called charitable work for others. This is also one of the very first experiences I had when I was a devotee. Just before I joined, I was working at the Head Start program. Most Americans don't know what the Head Start program is, right? It's a preschool program for kids, give them a head start on their education. So I was working in a Head Start program, Albany County, New York. And we went out collecting donations to help our program. And so I was assigned to go to one place that gave last year. So I went there and I talked to the people and said, no, we're not giving anything. We're not giving anything because last year we gave and you didn't give us any acknowledgement of what we gave. You didn't tell us thank you. So therefore, we're not giving this year. What were they giving for last year? They were giving for the thank you, for their own gratification, not the kids, not the school, not the effort to try to increase education. And that's how fruitive workers are. They're mainly interested in their own benefit. So when the Nagnabhatnis are praying, they're indicating that the answer to this riddle of the contradictions, forgive me, I can't help but try to resolve it. The answer to the contradiction is that Kali is a Vaishnava. He's a Vaishnava. Because he has free from pride and full of respect for others, performed austerities. That's once it's mentioned in the verse. And then in their second question in the verse, it comes up again. He executed religious duties with compassion for all living beings. So this idea of service to and compassion for others indicates that Kaliya was a Vaishnava. And that's why the Lord's footprints were on his head. Even though he had the body of a serpent. Now, of course, we know also, and we may need a little help here, is that there is a verse that describes that the past of a Vaishnava should not be considered. Right? Does anybody know that verse? One should not consider the past of a Vaishnava. Anyway, it's there. Yes. Yeah, Vaishnava. Not to consider the family or the caste of a Vaishnava. So, if he's a Vaishnava, then it doesn't matter whether he has his body of a serpent. Because we're not going to consider that. We're not going to consider that at all. We're going to consider and understand the situation based on Kaliya being a Vaishnava. And so Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur concludes that If a person respects all living entities and treats them with compassion, then the Supreme Lord, who is the shelter of all living entities, becomes satisfied. That is the meaning of this verse. He says, that is the meaning of this verse. And so, understanding it from that perspective of the living entity, the nature of the living entity in his purified state as a Vaishnava, is one facet of the jewel we can get from understanding this verse. Now, as I mentioned, in the Siddhanta category, there's the nature of the living entity, the devotee of the Lord. There's also Krishna's nature or Krishna's qualities. And so understanding Krishna's qualities is another way we can look at this verse and this apparent contradiction to our appreciation and worship of Lord Sri Krishna. And for this, I want to turn to Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where this pastime is specifically discussed in terms of a quality of Sri Krishna. That quality is possessing equilibrium. And so I'll just read what Prabhupada has written here. A person who is unaffected by attachment and envy is said to possess equilibrium. As an example of Krishna's equilibrium, an example of Krishna's equilibrium is given in the 10th canto, 16th chapter, verse 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam, in connection with his chastising Kaliya, the hundred-headed serpent. When Kaliya was being severely punished, all of his wives appeared before the Lord and prayed as follows. Dear Lord, you have descended to punish all kinds of demoniac living creatures. Our husband, this Kali, is a greatly sinful creature, and so your punishment for him is quite appropriate. We know, and this is the key sentence, we know that your punishment for your enemies and your dealings with your sons are both the same. We know that it is in thinking of the future welfare of this condemned creature that you have chastised him. So the Nagapatnis are saying here, and Srila Rupa Goswami is confirming Krishna's nature here, and that is that Krishna, whether he deals with his sons, and we assume that's in a loving way, or Kaliya in a chastising way, it's the same. It's not different. So there's no contradiction. There's really not a contradiction here. But how do we understand that? Again, we said this is the Siddhanta section, so what's the philosophy that backs this up? Well, we find that philosophy in Sri Ishupanishad, text number 8. Can anyone quote it for me? Text number 8 of Sri Ishupanishad? No. Sapariyak Chakram. Yes. Particularly Sudam Apapa Vidam. These two words used to describe Krishna explain this ability that Krishna has to deal in a loving way and dealing in a chastising way, and them being the same thing. They're not being a contradiction. So I'll read again. Sri Ishupanishad explains, such a person must factually know the greatest of all, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Only the Supreme Lord is self-sufficient. When the Lord appeared on earth 5,000 years ago, he displayed his full manifestation as the personality of Godhead through his various activities. In his childhood, he killed many powerful demons such as Agasur, Bakasur, Shaktakasur, and there was no question of his having acquired power through any extraneous endeavor. He lifted Govardhan Hill without ever having practiced. He lifted Govardhan Hill without ever practicing weightlifting. It's Prabhupada's purport. He danced with the gopis without social restriction and without reproach. A contradiction again. He danced with the gopis without restriction and without reproach. You can't blame Krishna for dancing with the gopis. He can do whatever he wants. He's sudam apapa vidam, that's why. Although the gopis approached him as with a paramour feelings of love, the relationship between the gopis and Lord was worshipped even by Lord Chaitanya, who is a strict sannyasi and rigid follower of disciplinary regulations. To confirm that the Lord is always pure and uncontaminated, Sri Upanishad describes him as sudam, antiseptic, and apapavidam, prophylactic. He is antiseptic in the sense that even an impure thing becomes purified just by touching him. The word prophylactic refers to the power of his association. As mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, a devotee may appear to be sudarachara, not well behaved, in the beginning, but he should be accepted as a pure devotee because he is on the right path. This is due to the prophylactic nature of the Lord's association. The Lord is also a papavidam because sin cannot touch him. Even if he acts in a way that appears to be sinful, such actions are all good, for there is no question of his being affected by sin. Because in all circumstances he is sudam, most purified, he is often compared to the sun. The sun extracts moisture from many untouchable places on earth, yet it remains pure. In fact, it purifies obnoxious things by virtue of its sterilizing powers. If the sun, which is a material object, is so powerful, then we can hardly begin to imagine the purifying strength of the all-powerful Lord. So, it's not that Krishna became, or was it, there was even any consideration of him being contaminated by connection with Kaliya. Indeed, his connection with Kaliya completely purified him. So it's not that Krishna was dancing on the heads of a sinful Kaliya, because Kaliya was purified as soon as Krishna touched him. As soon as he clasped Krishna in his coils, he was completely purified. Krishna is so powerful that his purity is so powerful that it's not like it takes time. Well, it takes time for us, for me, because we're very contaminated and lowly. So therefore, even though we're chanting the holy name, we don't become immediately purified. But it's not a limitation on Krishna's power, his purifying power. One can become completely purified in a moment. Just by one chanting of the holy name of the Lord, one can counteract more sins than one could ever commit. That's the nature of Krishna's purity. And so there's not a contradiction that he's dancing on the heads of a contaminated, sinful Kaliya. So his contact with the living entities is always purifying. It's always for the good of the living entity. So whether you're punished or embraced by Krishna, it's the same. It's the same. Again, I had an experience personally. I'll mention it. Maybe I mentioned it last time, but when I went to India in October, we visited Tirupati. And the whole GBC was going as a group together to get darshan of Balaji. And we waited for some time, and then they said, okay, now we can all go. But then I started to go with everybody else. But then there was one devotee there, he said, you can't go, you wait over there. I said, what do you mean I should wait over here? He said, you can't go. Everyone else is going. You have to stay here. What do you mean? I can't go with the other devotees? No, you have to stay over here. And then I just said, well, I'll just ignore this person. But then, it became a little forceful, and, I had to stay over there. I wasn't allowed to go to have darshan with Balaji, along with everybody else. So, I don't know why I was being singled out or punished or whatever, but the question really is that, was I the loser? Was I the loser? I got darshan, not with them and not the kind of darshan they had. You go to places like Tirupati, you can get one type of darshan, or you can have another type of darshan. And it involves the distance you are from the deity. So they got a close darshan, I got a far darshan. But the question is, was I at a disadvantage? If Krishna was punishing me for some reason and not letting me have that close darshan, did that put me at some kind of disadvantage over the others? I think not. Because whether Krishna punishes you or he embraces you, it's the same. It is for your benefit. You tremendously benefit from that. And so that's the nature of Krishna. That's the Siddhanta. The nature of Krishna, the Siddhanta of the nature of the living entity. And if we understand those things, then we get some appreciation of this pastime of Krishna. Now, as I said, three different instances and two categories. So those two instances were in Siddhanta. Now, Leela. Understanding this situation from the perspective of Leela. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, right at the very beginning, Krishna is explained to be Akila Rasamrita Murti. Does anybody want to give me a definition of that? Akila Rasamrita Murti. The form of all ras. Very good. Yes, that's what I want. The embodiment, form, source, personification, enjoyer, all these things of all rasa. That's Krishna. So, how do we understand that in terms of this situation? Well, again, if we turn to Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion, there's a description specifically of Kaliya speaking as a result of Krishna dancing on his hoods. And that's found in the 47th chapter. So let me read again. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 16th chapter, verse 10, there is the following description. When Krishna was chastising the Kaliya Naga in the Jamuna, the big snake wrapped his coils all over Krishna's body, and upon seeing Krishna in this situation, all his dear coward friends became greatly disturbed. Out of bereavement, distress, and fear, they became bewildered and began to fall on the ground. Because the coward boys were under the illusion that Krishna could be in some mishap, their symptoms are not at all astonishing. They had dedicated their friendship, possessions, their desires, and very selves to Krishna. Actually, this is not the verse that I was specifically referring to, but this is another aspect of Akila Rasamrita Murti, because it talks about the other devotees and how they were experiencing rasa in relation to Krishna. But specifically about Kaliya, there's this description. And this talks about the ecstasy of dread. Dread is an emotion. So the ecstasy of dread. And this situation with Kaliya is an example of that. There is another instance of a dreadful situation in which Krishna as the object, with Krishna as the object, as follows. After being sufficiently chastised by child Krishna in the Yamuna River, the Kaliya snake began to address the Lord. O killer of the Mura demon, I have gained many mystic powers by my austerities and penances, but before you I am nothing. I am most insignificant. Therefore, be pleased upon a poor soul like me, and don't be angry with me. I did not know of your actual position, and out of ignorance, I have committed such horrible offenses. Please save me. I am a most unfortunate creature. Please be merciful to me. This is another instance of the ecstasy of dread in devotional service. And so this ecstasy of dread has a couple of different aspects. It arises when there's chastisement and fear. I'll just read it again. In the ecstasy of love for Krishna in dread, there are two causes of fear, either Krishna himself or some dreadful situation for Krishna. When a devotee feels himself to be an offender at Krishna's feet, Krishna himself becomes the object of dreadful ecstatic love. And when, out of ecstatic love, friends and well-wishers of Krishna apprehend some danger for him, that situation becomes the object of their dread. So when one feels oneself an offender at Krishna's lotus feet, that's what Kali is feeling. He's feeling himself, he was an offender at Krishna's lotus feet. And therefore, what he's experiencing is actually an exchange of rasa with Krishna with this emotion of dread, which is kind of a mixture of fear and chastisement. So it's an exchange of rasa. What's going on here? It's an exchange of rasa. Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya and punishing him, and Kaliya feeling that he's been an offender, and his offering this prayer that we just read to the Lord. But how is Krishna feeling? To understand how Krishna feels, there's another example here that deals with Krishna fighting with Rikshiraj, Jambavan, who was also a devotee of the Lord, who was fighting with Krishna. And it describes here how Krishna was speaking to him. And this is also about this ecstasy of dread. He says, "My dear Rikshiraj, why is your face so dry? Please do not feel threatened by me. There is no need for your heart to tremble like this. Please calm yourself. I have no anger towards you. You may, however, become as angry as you like with me to expand your service in fighting with me and to increase my sporting attitude." In this dreadful situation, in ecstatic love for Krishna, Krishna himself is the object of dread. So Krishna wanted to dance. We know that Akila Rasamrita Murti, he had so many rasas going on with the residents of Vrindavan when he was dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, with the gopis, with Mother Yasoda, with the cowherd boys, all different rasas were going on. And that was going on with Kaliya also. It was going on with Kaliya also in this dread, ecstasy of dread. He liked it. He liked the activities of Kaliya that made his dancing so special. We read about how the hood would try to attack him and Krishna would jump here and jump there. Very agile. Someone was asking about agile. I think it was Pran Govinda was asking about this word, agile, what it meant. Were you asking that when we were reading this earlier? It's nice to get an understanding of these words because it gives you some idea how Krishna was very wonderfully dancing. And so he was enjoying all these things. He was enjoying with Kaliya. So that's another way to understand that this is an exchange of rasa between the Lord and his devotee in this ecstasy of dread that was going on. So the contradictions here are good. It helps us to meditate and go a little deeply into Krishna's pastimes and his activities. So there's just a couple minutes left, and so I want to review something that I've been presenting during the classes that I give on the 10th canto here, and these are the five elements of rasa, just so that we can review these things and make sure we try to understand and develop these things. Although I can tell you that when I was in India this time, I had some time where I was, some downtime where I was recovering, and so I was reading Jiva Dharma by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I realized that rasa tattva is a very, very deep subject matter, and to think that, at least for me to think, that I have any kind of understanding of this is kind of a joke when you understand the depth that's discussed there. So these things are like putting our toe into the ocean of rasa, but you know, let's put our toe in, and it's because there's no harm in doing that. So this rasa we were talking about here, the ecstatic dread, is called bhayanaka rasa, and there are five elements, starting with vibhava. So vibhava is the cause for tasting rasa, or the tasting rati, or attraction, and vishaya, or the object of that, is Krishna himself, and we see Krishna dancing on Kaliya's head, and the ashraya is the shelter of that love, that type of love or attraction, that is Kaliya in this, and the udipana is described here as being the movements of the demon's eyebrows, or probably the striking of the hoods, which increased the ecstasy of the situation. Second element, anubhava, which is actions resulting from heightened affection, the concert of conscious actions. They are drying up of the mouth, breathing deeply, turning to look behind oneself, hiding oneself, wavering, taking shelter of someone, and this is one I like, screaming. Screaming is a symptom, anubhava, in this ecstatic dread. Then there are the sattvika bhavas, which are eight in number, or involuntary or unpremeditated expressions arising from surcharged consciousness. Vyabhachari bhavas are the transitory ecstasies, including fear, death, restlessness, agitation, depression, despair, bewilderment, forgetfulness, and alarm. And the sthayi bhava, or permanent ecstasy, affection, and fear. So these are some ways in which we can understand this pastime. Well, it lists here in Kali, I'm not sure here, because it lists the sthayi bhavas. Generally, we think of sthayi bhavas as the five, you know, the sakya, dasya, you know, madhurya, like that. And so here it lists the sthayi bhava as bhayarati, or affection and fear. And that's one of the, I think they're called gona rasas, the indirect rasas, secondary. Mukhya is direct.
Kaliya is feeling that everything I wanted in my life is him. Yet I was going opposite. Yet he was showing so much merciful. He's so lovable, so affectionate, so kind to me, and I was trying to harm him. So he regrets and repents. This is when this takes place, that time his dasya bhav recedes in the back, and then this regret comes in the front. So he releases this from the back, But the bhayanak or this dreadful comes in the front. It's a little technical, how Krishna enjoy bir ras. This is not his main, but he does enjoy, where his primary things receives in the back and see that fighting spirit actually a relishment.
Okay.
It's a little technical. If somebody is aware, then they will be able to relish. Otherwise, it's like a very technical.
Yeah. Well, as I said, very technical but relishable ocean of rasa tattva.
But very nice class. I really appreciate your breaking down so nicely. But one thing should be addressed in the whole chapter. Otherwise, there will be Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad writes in Dasami Tippani that even Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that whenever we talk of bhakti, that has to be, or Krishna coming in somebody's life, here Kaliya's life, Krishna came, there has to be the cause is bhakti, not anything else. So this austerity and all other qualification actually is not a qualification. The qualification is he must have a bhakti. So to trace out that bhakti is not coming from a sky or somewhere else or from the book, bhakti only comes from the heart of a bhakta. One who has bhakti can give bhakti. Bhakta sanjayate bhakta. So many verses give like that. So then Sanatana Goswami Pad traces that where is the origin devotee who gave the bhakti to Kaliya in order for Kaliya's wife, not knowing that past life, that they are now inquiring, what is the cause, my Lord, you have caused. So then they give a two life story that Mother Nanda also mentioned other day a little bit of.
Is that in the next chapter? Is that in the next chapter? It's a history of Kaliya.
Yeah, well, that's why I was not giving the whole. It's a long story, but it's good to know that Kanchi Raj, who was you try to amplify very nicely. You have such a good quality. Always, even Kaliya has a bad quality, but you're trying to emphasize that Kaliya was a good guy, which is good, very good. That he must have done something for others, like you said. At least a couple of times I heard that he must have done something for others' benefit. He must have done welfare activities. And he did. No, I know, but Sarasvati Prabhu was emphasizing, repeating. So that's very good. Because as a Kanchi Raj, two lives before, he did. He was a king, this Kaliya. While he was a king, he wanted to take care of the citizen. And he was, but he got such an antar shira, it's like a kind of a disease that cannot be cured. So he was such a severely suffering, that time Narad Muni was passing by and he asked Narad Muni, how can I get rid of this? Because if I leave this world, I don't know how the citizen will be maintained, they need protection in this. So he had that kind of nature in two lives before. So at that time Narad Muni gave this whole medicine test. And in the medicine, I'm just going to squeeze the story because it's a long story, that how at the end, these birds, well, then how do I squeeze it? Anyway, he's supposed to catch a pigeon alive and take the blood, and that blood will cure his intestine. It's called antoshira, I don't know the English name. Some kind of disease in the intestine. So then while he was trying to catch, that he was sitting there and his minister was throwing some grains, and the pigeon comes nearby, not coming in front of the king. But he saw there is a saint in the forest where the pigeon is going right next to his knee and others. And then king asked, how come the pigeon goes to the saints next to the knees but doesn't come nearby me? So then there was one devotee who says that actually you wanted to kill. And they have intuition of sniffing that you are actually murderer even though you are a king, that you're going to kill, so they don't come nearby. So he regretted, and he really regretted, and he confessed to Narad Muni, how is that I am so bad that even my citizen pigeon are afraid of me, actually. Because. So then in that regrets, then at one point he was thinking that I should become like a saint, and he was practicing again this little austerity. And that time near one pigeon came, and then he wanted to survive, so he wanted to grab the bird, and the bird just fly away. And said, hey, then Bart started talking his language. He said, you want to catch me so you can eat the blood and you live at my cost, at my life? If you really want to be benefited, go in that big tree, banyan tree, and in the hollow, inside the tree, there's a hollow, there is a great saint. Drink the foot wash water, and then you will be saved. So then king was very excited, so he went there, and he paid obeisances, he glorified the sadhu, but he could not see the sadhu because it was a dark cave. Hollow. You say hollow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, but some or other, the sage was above in the hollow inside, high enough that nobody can see. So then after he praises, say, oh, I'm the king of this country, please help me, that I was suggested if I can wash your feet and drink, then my disease will be cured, so I can take care of the citizen and protect the country and like this. So then the sadhu, he sticked out one of his leg, but the leg was a lot of pus and blood and and then the king want to drink, but before he even put it, he was feeling like throwing up because the order was coming. And he could not take it. He was thinking with his intelligence, how do I do it? He said, I don't mean to offend you, but would you mind of giving the other leg, not this one? So he took this leg off and then stick out the other leg, and it's even worse. Apparently, I should not say it because he's a saint. But then king thought, what am I going to do? I want to stay alive. So anyway, he poured little water and he could not put inside the mouth. And he made his mouth an ugly, something disgusting smell. I don't know how you say in English. Like something like that.
Right.
He made his ugly face. But he took the water on his head. As a result, as a Kaliya, Krishna, because he put the foot wash water of the sadhu on his head was pure, and it was pure goodness in order for Krishna to come and dance. But his mouth, because he discarded the sadhus and he thought it was a bad, his mouth became full of poison.
Okay.
This is a little. Huh? Yeah. You want to try? No, he didn't drink, that's why his mouth became poison. So all the bad things is that if we don't take Krishna consciousness,
but that
all the
was,
bad things.
That was the bhakti that he got from
correct.
That instance.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Anyone else? I'm going to run Srimad Bhagavatam.